Nous allons recommencer les débats.
Now let's start again. I would like to ask the next panel to come to the podium. So the representative of Cumbria, Mr. Fonseca, Miguel Fonseca.
Boris
Bélanger. Also, Mr. Boris Bélanger, Deputy Mayor of the City of Montpellier, and Anne-Lise Laurent, who is the author of the white paper on culture in the city center. So, Alice, you're the moderator, and you can ask the first question to Mr. Fonseca, who will be the president of this observatory. And thank you for having come from Portugal. So, after the coffee that ended our lunch, we're going to talk about culture and event. How appropriate. Now, we know that all the surveys show that people who live in city centers are attached to culture. So how important is culture for city centers, in your opinion?
Je crois qu'il y a une présentation.
And a cue to the technical team, there should be a PPT.
Je veux parler en anglais.
If you allow me, I would make my presentation in English. Thank you.
Centre Violon Mouvement for the invitation to coordinate this area of our observatory dedicated to culture and animation. Our municipality of Coimbra in Portugal, right in the center of Portugal, is delighted to work in this rich network that will promote good practices and sharing the excellent experiences that we can see all over Europe. Well, my presentation is about what we are doing in Coimbra in order to promote culture and animation as a way to dynamize and to revitalize the historical center of our city. Where we are, Coimbra is right in the center of Portugal, is one of the oldest cities of our country, is at less than 2 hours from two international airports, Porto and Lisbon, and we have excellent network and railway, road and railway networks between the main points of our country. And for that reason, we are strategically located. We have a good geographic location in our country. You can pass to the other, please. Well, some brief indicators about our city. Coimbra has a population of 141,000 inhabitants. We have the highest concentration of population in the center region of Portugal. We have the highest per cap purchasing power in that region, and we have many competitive advantages in national terms, like the affordable cost of living, our top-ranked public services, especially in education and in health. We have one of the oldest Portuguese university, one of the oldest in Europe, the well-known University of Coimbra, and we have also high standards of health, standards in terms of health, because we have a renowned and well-known central hospital with a good connection also with the university. In terms of higher education, we have one of the oldest universities, as I said. We have also a polytechnic institute, and each year we have some kind of 8,000 talents that are produced in our university and polytechnic institute that is able to go to the market of work. The other, please. Some other features of Coimbra. We have, as I said, the privileged location right in the center of Portugal. We are a very safe city, and we have also classified since 10 years ago as World Heritage by UNESCO. Our historical center was classified by UNESCO in 2013. And we have some reasons that made Coimbra one of the most exciting centers in terms of culture in Portugal. We are the third city in the country with the most live cultural events, and we have an excellent infrastructure, the Convento São Francisco, that is a point of cultural events, but also of corporate events. That is located right just near the river, and it deserves the visit. The other one, please. Well, in terms of our strategy in Coimbra, and that's the reason why we are so honored for assuming the coordination of this thematic area, is to revitalize the city center. As the other panels have debated, the city centers are facing some challenges, connected with some fall in terms of commercial stores, in terms of also in inhabitants. And so our strategy, in terms of a comprehensive development of our city, put some higher investment in terms of cultural and events, and also to transform our city center in an attractive hub of development. For that, the municipality is fully committed with this mission, and we collaborate with local commerce, with cultural and social associations, as well as with residents in that zone of our city. And for that reasons, we are assuming that this area and this network with other European municipalities and cities sharing experiences is really crucial to achieve our goals. The other one, please. In terms of the main events that we are doing in our city, some examples: the arts and crafts fairs that wants to safeguarding the tangible and intangible cultural heritage of our city and the whole region, and that is a site in order to artisanal and artistic expressions. Live in the place, and these arts and crafts fairs occurs each month right in the center of city. The other one, please. The book fair has moved to the city center 2 years ago, and we want to in this book fair promote the Portuguese language on a global scale, and so we have in this book fair some events not only related to books but also with cultural events and cultural activity. The other one, please. We have also magic encounters in the city center with international magicians and street performances that also contributes to this animation in our city center. The other one, please. The summer vibes, as the name says, in the summer, with presentation of famous and with also famous and emergent bands and artists in the center of the city. And in this year, we will have the Epicentro Festival that will take place between June and September. That will connect cultural and artistic intervention in the buildings, in the streets, in the routes, and also in the monuments that are based on this area of the city, the downtown. Also, the medieval fair that wants to promote the historical heritage of our city, involving all the community and with historical recreations, as well as the other one, please, the municipal market. I want to highlight the municipal market because in this municipal market we want to share and to promote the links between a commercial perspective with cultural and social programming, and in our strategy, the municipal market, as the examples of the photo show, have been such a place for events like a beer festival, a competition of cycling, and other events, joining cultural sports and other ways of living the city, and not only on this traditional perspective of a commercial site. Also in the city center, and that is the building of our municipality and the Santa Cruz Church, we promote also organizing festivities like video mapping. That was the video mapping that took place between 21st and 23rd of December, live music, street events, and other events. And I would also like to highlight this project at Baixa. Baixa is the nomination for our downtown. Baixa Coimbra is the lowest area of our city, and we achieved funds from European Union in such a high point. That's some mistake in that value. The
oui. Si je peux me permettre exactement.
If I may. So thank you very much for the presentation. We really look forward to visiting Coimbra. So how do you use European funds? It's important for us to be able to work with you on this particularly topic of EU fund. How do you manage to get EU fund? What's the method? If you could give us some explanation. We know that culture has a cost. It might not be the priority in terms of financial and budget. So how do you go about securing EU funds? And can you give us any tips?
Some projects in terms of URBACT in the past, we are working in order to achieve more funds from that way. This project especially is from the European funds, from Plan of Recovery and Resilience, and our goal is to transform downtown in an open air shopping center. There was the main goal is to create a new consumer relationship with the stores, and also to transform this downtown with a platform into a digital platform. That was I was saying that the amount that we achieved is not 2.6 but 1.24 million euros, the third amount in this project that is named Quartier Commercial Digital. And this at Baixa wants to change the relationship between between commerce and the consumers, And it's, I think it's a well achieved strategy because it shares also with a local development association and also with an association of consumers and also of commercial stores in the right in the center. We are truly committed in this strategy in this project that has to be concluded since October 2025. But we are optimistic that can bring a new way of relationship between the consumer and the commerce in downtown city.
Merci. Alors on est parti au Portugal, on revient en France.
Thank you very much. So we went to Portugal and we come back to France.
Longer, vous êtes maire adjoint au.
Mr. Béran Bélanger, deputy mayor of the city of Montpellier. Maybe you could tell us what you've done, tangible actions in the city of Montpellier on culture. Yes, the heading deputy mayor to the city center and cultural policies. Interesting title. Yes. Sometimes people work in a vacuum. Often urban development is not tied to culture, heritage. And I think that in many cases there is a separation. But I think that tourism should be linked to trade, culture, heritage. We should try to work in tandem. And that is the challenge of our city centers. Firstly, thank you very much for having invited me. As you know, my title, Culture, included in the observatory, that is very important. And so that means that culture shouldn't only be celebrated, it should be part and parcel of a city's activities, part of the European Observatory, therefore. Now, in the city of Montpellier, access to culture, it has to be accessible by making the city center accessible. And so how do we go about doing that? We decided on free public transport for those living in the Metropole. It wouldn't make sense, in fact, to have free museums without allowing people to travel into Montpellier free of charge. Sometimes there's a small hurdle to overcome to allow people to benefit from culture. And so we did away with that final small hurdle, free public transport. Furthermore, the city center. A city center should be at the heart, is at the heart of the metropolitan area. It's important to renovate, rehabilitate. But what's important is to make people want to come to Montpellier. Why? So that they can access culture, something that they can't access from their villages and smaller towns. So it's important to have used that leverage and to have made access to the city center easier. Coimbra is one of the oldest university towns worldwide, and in Montpellier we have the oldest medicine faculty worldwide. So, the way I see things is that we thought a great deal of flows, blood, but then there's the problem of space, organs, and places, and I'm thinking medically here. We have to and we had to look at flows. Places shouldn't be an obstacle so that people could flow into the pedestrian city. That is why we want to become the biggest pedestrian area of France and Europe. This is essential. The following slide, I would like to give you the example of Place de la Comédie at the heart of the metropolitan area. So Place de la Comédie, as you have it here, it is more shady. For many years, we had dealt with flows, directing cars. They're all in tunnels and underground parking lots. What happened? The squares were very hot, and Place de la Comédie had become a hot spot. It was too hot. And we wanted pedestrians to cross it. It was very difficult to cross it under 42 degrees of temperature. And so we wanted to entice people, to bring them to the square from the shopping mall that we have not far from the square. So there we had a private operator. They injected 50,000 or 500,000 euros into rehabilitating or renovating their shopping mall. And the state intervened likewise to make the Place de la Comédie more livable. To go back to the previous slide, please. The idea is to bring in vegetation and to do so with the architect of the Bâtiment de France, because it's very difficult to bring in vegetation where there's a lot of cement, a lot of buildings, a lot of historical buildings. One has to be very brave to do that. Bringing in trees in squares with old buildings. In order to do that, one has to work with other partners. Now here, this square is a technical challenge, difficult to plant trees on a cemented area with an underground parking lot. And this challenge was met. The trees, when you plant them in a city, they need 15 cubic meters to develop. The idea was to make sure that the trees, given that they are in a constrained environment, to enable them to develop normally. So we have big tanks underground to allow them to grow. So these eight big trees will be able to develop with a canopy appearing in a few years' time. This will enable the pedestrians to cross the square without being too hot. What we want to do is to have a bench with a Mediterranean garden, you see it here, so that the inhabitants can meet without necessarily having to go to the cafes. What was also important was to enable children to plant and adopt one of the 50,000 trees and the tanks. How did you do these tasks? Yeah, what we did was we did away with parking spaces so there are these immense tanks in the parking lot. Some parking spaces have been lost, but we've redesigned the parking lot. Cars will be able to park, but also bikes and scooters, so that there are fewer bikes and scooters. In the city, there's a tunnel underneath Place de la Comédie, and we did away with the transit area, the parking lot is still there, but the cars cannot cross the parking lot. So the tunnel will become a place that the bikes can cross, that the bikes can park on. Because the problem is that the bikes are generally on the square and it bothers the flows. So how did the inhabitants react? How did the citizens react? Well, that's important too, and that's why this photo seems very commonplace or banal, but it is something that we found in the archives. We, I think, mustn't... in fact, the past can help us to build the future. We have the Esplanade after the Place de la Comédie. And on the photo here, you see that the space we're trying to master on the Esplanade, we had a lot of fountains there. They weren't part of the heritage. So this is what we used to have. And that's what we're aiming for. This photo dates back to 1900. And this project that we've dealt with enables us to look into the future, look back at the past, and have a compromise, an improved version of what we had. A lot of people looked into the past, but they didn't know how to innovate. It's very important to note that the way in which one goes about changing and transforming might or might not enable the inhabitants to be involved. This is why all the facades were covered in photos of how the Place de la Comédie used to be. And the work site enabled people to imagine. We had an exhibition, open-air exhibition, to explain the past and the future, the project, in other words. So this is a way of working with the citizens, and we did that with the citizens, with the people, the shopkeepers, so we involved a lot of people. A few more moments, if you allow me. This is what the Esplanade will look like, following on from the Place de la Comédie. So we had old water fountains, 40 years old. They weren't part of the heritage. So what we're now going to do is we're going to have dry fountains and access to the Esplanade. These water fountains are closed-circuit water fountains, no loss of water. And children will be drawn to this place, so will be active. So these places are for children. Next slide. So lighting is another important aspect. Very often when we think of a project, one doesn't think of lighting, but we did that right from the start. The way in which the facades would be lit up. We have the Opéra Comédie, we have Musée Phare, the Modern Art Museum, the Palais des Congrès, and another number of cultural buildings. So very important to think of how to light up the buildings. Now this is the next photo, how to connect these different important cultural places, what's important is to make the place a welcoming one for children, for families, a place where children, where families can come and enjoy culture, not only a place where people go to the theater, to go to the cinema, but a place where people go to enjoy themselves, to relax. So we have public spaces and cultural places. There is equipment here. I'm thinking of a kiosk. This is a remarkable part of the heritage. Dates back to last century, but it aged very badly. We could have done away with it, but we're renovating it. And what we will do will be to attract the National Orchestra of Montpellier, bring them here, and with them, the citizens. So bring the citizens to live in these public places. The Esplanade will, we hope, become a place not only to hold equipment, but also a place where art is exhibited. So we're going to put up a lot of artifacts. The park won't only be for those who go to places of culture, but also a place where children will go. And when they go to the park to stay in the park, they will be able to see these artifacts. There'll be many more that will be deployed. So that's what we've done to make Montpellier a little bit more dynamic. Yes, thank you. A very interesting area. This morning, we all received a book on culture, didn't we? Thank you, Annelise Romandetla. You wrote the book. You started off by mentioning France. This is the book. The cultural exception or the exceptional outstanding culture. Why?
Sujet d'entrée du.
Well, because it sets the scene and it's stating the obvious. Also, and I will explain why. But that's the richness of the French language. In our culture, we use the same words, but in a different order, and they mean something else. So cultural exception, what does it mean for me? It's your relationship with culture. We have a unique relation with and to culture in France due to our history, our heritage, with over 400 listed monuments, the outstanding number of cultural sites and buildings, such as cinemas and museums. But it was also a very typical French myth in relation to culture, whereby French artists and French monuments are like part of the museum and the Pantheon, just like the Eiffel Tower or Marie Antoinette. So a very rich culture, which makes our relationship to culture very unique. And then exception in French can also mean excellence. In an order of the cost-cutting topic linked to culture, France is known for its excellence, painting, literature, fashion, food and gastronomy. We have renowned French chefs. So to be exceptional also is a meaning of this. So this is a white paper where you actually ask questions and set the scene. And I would imagine that you met a lot of people, you interviewed a lot of people. In summary, all of what those people told you, what do you make of their contributions? Well, the topic of the interviews was very specific. It was about festivals. Culture brings a lot to the population, to the area, to the towns, and festival is about that. It's about union, communing, being together, and energy. So we decided to focus on festivals. So we selected 14 festivals organized by different type of municipalities, from the very small village that organizes a very famous festival, other sizes. And all of this to say that the word that all of the interviewees mentioned is passion. All the festival organizers are passionate about what they want to organize. And for a festival to organize, all the players and the people involved must be passionate. And that's what they told me. When somebody is passionate, they really want to bring something and achieve something, and they convince elected officials that can then bring the funding to organize a festival. And coupled with quality, then usually that's the recipe for success. So it can be a festival about anything and many things. It could be a very local produce. It could be a festival on an outstanding building. Anything is good. Thank you. And I agree with you. Culture encompasses a wide range of activities, and the perspective of festival is indeed very interesting, and because it's also very useful to know the role of local authorities in festivals. Yeah, at the beginning of the white paper, there are a couple of key figures and situation in terms of the local authorities. And one has to say that a lot of local authorities play a very important role in the festival landscape. For those of us who work a lot on making city centers attractive, festivals are very important. It allows very small village or small towns to make themselves known and visible. It's like a puppetry festival. It would attract thousands of visitors. Indeed, sometimes you actually don't realize what an impact you made, and the outreach can even go beyond the French territory. So it's a real driver for attractiveness. It also makes the local inhabitants very proud. A lot of cultural events nourish the soul, but a local festival, the local inhabitants feel like they own the festival in a way. And that's very important, local ownership. I would also comment on something that I discovered reading your document, is the relationship between medicine and culture. So we know that culture can nourish the soul and also cure the soul, heal the soul. And nowadays, you might know that GPs can prescribe cultural visits, or visit to museum can be part and parcel of a GP prescription, because they've realized that to be exposed to culture can heal some wounds and diseases. Museum in Lille hosted over 4,000 people who benefited from this culture medical prescription. So there's a lot to be said. Thank you very much. Now that we're talking about festivals, maybe we can move on to the next panel. But now that we're talking about festivals, just to tell you that we will organize the National Forum of City Centers in Avignon. You might be familiar with the city of Avignon and its festival. So the forum will take place on the 21st of May in the evening. It will start with the launch of the national barometers on consumers' expectation with the help of cities media. And the forum itself will take place on the 22nd and the 23rd in the Palais des Papes. So the fifth observatory on planning and sustainable mobility. Can I call on Antoine Toubardeau, Benoît Arrivé, and José Herrera from Madrid, if they could come to the panel.
Bonjour.
Alors là, on va remercier une université.
So first, thanks to a university, somebody from the University of Karlsruhe. Antoine Toubardeau, thank you very much for coming and attending our launch. Thank you also to your university who has accepted to be a co-chair of this observatory. Yes, University of Karlsruhe in Germany, of course. You specialize in sustainable planning and mobility. And you give us a couple of outstanding European examples on this matter.
La présence, oui.
Ah voilà, merci, oui. J'ai quelques exemples dans mes.
A few examples on my slides. But if you allow me, I'd like to present myself a researcher, head of a project. I'm a geography expert, but I also deal with mobility. It's not that I won't answer your questions, of course, but I won't be able to answer all the questions. We work with the KIT, University of Karlsruhe, as you said, and ÖDS, created in 2002. And we are an institute which deals with industrial problems and fundamental research projects, European projects, French projects. And we work with ÖDF, Guillaume Flachat, for example. Next slide. So there's about 100 of us. We have a multidisciplinary approach, engineering, computer science, and so on here. Four research fields. Firstly, climate neutral communities, cities, towns, surrounding areas, everything that has to be with a climate neutrality, then local multi-energy systems, geothermal energies, fuel, biomass, hydrogen, biocarbon, a group that works on transition in terms of energy. Then we have another two, then research, what is done technology, materials, roadmaps, how regulations change. We're going to do modeling, simulate tools, analyze case studies and support our partners' solution implementation. And I haven't forgotten your question, but introduce the answer. We work more specifically on low carbon use, geospatial analysis and urban data development. We try to think of different scenarios. We assess the scenarios, set up indicators, platforms to look into how the indicators evolve. We work on models, analyze governance, and we work on participation and empowering citizens and people who live at the local level. We also engage in mapping. Then we have different examples I wanted to mention to you today. I won't go into the ins and outs of these. But some are more interesting than others. There's many other very interesting examples throughout Europe, but these are the ones we've worked on, so we know them very well. So we work upstream on territorial studies to do with traffic, integration of hydrogen, technology, energy, offer services to do with mobility as well. We have carried out a number of studies on these different aspects via partnerships that we establish with different cities, local authorities in France, Célestat, Grandes, Mulhouse, and with New York in particular, so, and German cities. I will give you three or four examples of projects. So let's move on to the next slide. Let's move on to the following slide because I've already looked into these. So this is a project that we developed in the south of France, a project funded by ADEM to try to identify the links between electric batteries, hydrogen, and natural gas to, and that for different vehicles or vehicle fleets. We came up with characterization models. Choices were made on what vehicles to use to help companies in making the best choices and choosing the best vehicles. This enabled us to also carry out environmental analyses. We look in the potential of green hydrogen. We come up with tools to help in making decisions. There's a map of the spatial aspect is something that is particularly interesting. It's important to be able to visualize, to analyze different criteria through the spatial analysis. That's very interesting when we're dealing with mobility, sustainability. So it's all very important. The following example, I was talking about participation as a public project with the city of Karlsruhe, a European project, therefore. We are based in Karlsruhe. We were there. That's why we worked with the city to decide where to place charging structures for bicycles. We use a participatory method, participative GIS, for those who know it. So workshops with online inquiries, online maps, paper maps, hand in hand with interviews, with work upstream, downstream with the city, with different partners to identify key zones for this kind of infrastructure. So mobility, town planning, we did something similar 2 years on to identify the problems related to heat islands or hotspots, and that in order to deal with this problem of hot spots and how it was possible, it might be possible to change these places. This is a big problem, and this is linked to mobility, soft mobility for pedestrians, for bikers. The problem of heat in cities is important. Participation levels, if you allow me. Do you know whether the inhabitants were happy, are happy with this, the participation to the survey? I can't quite give you a figure. What was the reaction then? Positive, very much so. And this tool mapping is interesting. We've done it elsewhere. This has some difficulty, of course, because one has to be able to read a map on the phone, when the photo old. It doesn't really work, it isn't quite so easy. But it's interesting, and it gives further results that add up to the classical questionnaires. So this is something that is booming because it enables us to have data. We mentioned it today, creating data, very important. Here we create this extra data that is very much needed. Another example here, we worked in Toulouse with the models to see how traffic evolves at different levels and try to establish a link between evolution of traffic and of pollutants and how one can adapt oneself to that. Next slide. My last example, the question of urban development, the environment, public health as well. These are topics, these are approaches at the very heart of mobility. We developed methods that were put in practice in Strasbourg, link between town planning, producing energy and traffic, air quality, noise, cutting down on hotspots. The work in Strasbourg allowed us to implement a voluntary model. This has led to a lot less traffic. We've been able to test different cases. We've had come up with options. And we are able now to adapt to the city's requests. The city of Strasbourg, I mentioned it. This enabled us to work on these different topics. And then the last slide. That was the last slide, it would seem. So yes, what we can bring to the observatory. There are 3-4 seminars that are planned between 9 November 2025. They're linked to what I've just said because that's what we're experts at. But of course, we are going to be on the lookout. We're going to listen to the reactions, partners and others. And it's important to establish a link between the quantitative models, governance, citizens' opinions. Basing ourselves on our partnership to work at the European level, it's important to look at the needs of the citizens, of the local authorities, trying to see where money can come from, do the research. Yes, that's what's interesting, and it's true that the example of the mayor from Cherbourg-Contentin is very interesting. because in Cherbourg, you are on the sea, so things are done differently. Mobility is evolving so much in the city center and within the cities in general. So maybe you could tell us what's happening there. Thank you.
Voilà. Merci.
Thank you. And thank you very much for inviting me to this event. And I hope I will be able to contribute to the discussion with a local example. So maybe by way of introduction, let me introduce you to Cherbourg. So we have 80,000 inhabitants. It is in the region of Normandy, in the Cotentin area. We're on the coast, indeed. And it's important to know that all of the changes occurring are the result of our decision in 2017. We decided back then to, from a governance level, to become a municipality and to have only one municipality. So it is by way of structuring the municipality differently that we were able to bring about changes in terms of city center planning and mobility. The area of Cherbourg is very dynamic in terms of the industrial sector, with the unemployment rate falling from 11% to under 5%. So a lot of employment, a very dynamic area from employment and economic point of view. A lot of employment in the nuclear sector, because we're also hosting EDF, and also a lot of naval work, shipbuilding work. We're also a member of the Cœur de Ville program, so that we can strengthen and revitalize the city center. The first issue we wanted to deal with is the issue of mobility. So 129 communes in the municipality, or the community of municipalities, that is Cherbourg en Cotentin, that covers about 182,000 inhabitants overall. And so we had to do a lot of work in terms of public transport, and work were carried out in Cherbourg-en-Cotentin with a bus deployed, and also interurban bus routes, so that within the agglomeration, people can easily travel. We are proud to have some of the most beautiful beaches in France. Okay, of course, the temperatures might not be there in summer, but beautiful beaches and coastline. And up until very recently, there is no direct travel system between the station in Cherbourg and the coastline. So we want to correct this to make sure that the natural amenities are easily accessible. We have about 20 bus lines, and from September we will have a new fleet of buses, and the mobility between the municipalities of the agglomeration is very important. Next slide. Here you can see the new transport network for Cherbourg-en-Cotentin. So we have dedicated bus lanes. In the past, buses were used by people who had no cars. And now we are trying to convince all of the inhabitants to use the new bus system. My be something easy for people who live in Strasbourg to use the public buses, but it is not so in other towns and cities such as Cherbourg. So we want using buses to become a habit. And not only in Cherbourg-en-Cotentin, but also in the wider agglomeration, the previous map. So to have better linkages with the other towns so that people, workers, can travel and commute without having to use their cars. So this is the current state of the streets. And later on, I will show you what we want to do. So we want to restrict the space occupied by cars, especially in this area, which is right on the coastline. So we want to requalify this area in a town where there haven't been major works for the past 50 years. And that it also implies upgrading the gas network and other utility networks. So we also try to make sure that bus journeys are quicker than car journeys, and also to link public transport with the port area. So it all started in May. It was a bit difficult to launch this project, but it took a lot of ambition and willingness. On top of that, we are changing the classification or the zoning of the city center. And you can see this on the map. There's a 3 kilometer long railway track completely disused in the city center, and everybody had forgotten about it, but we want to make it usable again so that it would no longer accommodate trains, but pedestrians and cyclists to link the train station and other areas of the town. And it's also about making sure that this area, which was completely disused, lives again. So it's an inner suburb area, a ring road, if you like, for pedestrians and cyclists. So rezoning of some streets into pedestrian-only streets. We're lucky to have a city center. I would like to thank the elected official in the town of Cherbourg who've been working on this issue. So we're lucky to have a very resilient city center. A lot of the vacant premises were taken up by young, dynamic business people. And so we have new shops, dynamic shops, and we decided to pedestrianize the streets for a simple reason. They were built in the 60s, no upgrading work, but not to upgrade and modernize those pedestrian streets was to bring them to death, if you like, because there was a need to also upgrade the connection to the water and the gas and electricity network. So that's why we decided to upgrade and modernize the pedestrian streets, also by way of attracting new businesses and new consumers, bearing in mind that the city center is very close to the other catchment and living area. You can easily walk from one neighborhood to the next. We also want to upgrade one of the quays of the town. And so the issue of pedestrianizing was very important. But it took first decision of the local authority to be the driver, and then the work proper started. So this is what things look like at the moment. As you can see, it doesn't look as nice as the previous pictures. And so these are the pedestrianized streets, pedestrian streets. So you can see different pipes are being put in place. So it's a mid-sized town in somewhat decline, but we're now on the track of growth again. So it was the time, the right time to invest. Things are progressing well, and I wish the very best of luck to all of the other mayors and elected officials in the other municipalities who are about to launch the works of this scale. It takes a lot of ambition and boldness and willingness, but it has to be done for mid-sized towns. It's very interesting. For two reasons. Political willingness is often the driving engine. Can you tell us a couple of words on your market? Takes place on two squares, I think. And in all of the barometers, it's clear that young people, the 18, 25 years old, are very much attracted by city center. So what you do on public transport, is it also to attract young people to city center, to the city center? When I visited Cherbourg, I was really struck at the number of terraces, you know, outdoor seating areas, etc. Yes, indeed, mobility is linked to the initial willingness and vision we had at the town hall. We want to increase the number of bus lanes, of cycling tracks. 25 to 30% of people who live in Cherbourg do not have cars, and I told you that the bus system was not attractive, was not good enough. So I'm convinced that when the new bus system is deployed with buses, night buses including, will be a way to address the needs of the inhabitants. Because if you live at the edge of the city, if you don't have a good public transport system, you can't go to the cinema, you can't go to the theater, etc. So here you can see two squares where we have our markets. And it's one of the positive impact from the COVID-19 pandemic. Some of our fellow mayors in Normandy decided to take action. One day, right in the middle of COVID-19, the prefect told us that if you wanted to keep the markets open during COVID-19, you had to have social distancing and you had to really comply with statutory distances. So we got together and we worked together and decided to have a market, or to have two markets on two different squares. And post-COVID, so many shop owners at the beginning were against, and now they're absolutely for it. Post-COVID, we realized that to have market taking place on two squares increases the footfall and the number of people who would come to visit the city center. And indeed, the local inhabitants wanted to keep the two squares. It also means that new businesses were able to have a stall. And so now, if we wanted to come back to the old model of one square, one market, we couldn't, because there wouldn't be enough space to accommodate all of the new stalls that cannot trade on the squares. So yes, of course, maybe during the winter months, the footfall is not as significant as during the better weather months, but that was a positive impact of the COVID-19 pandemic. And also, our open-air markets are truly dynamic. They offer genuinely local producers with up-and-coming local farmers, and here is a linkage with the farmers' crisis. So it is a feature of our time. Thank you very much. Thank you. A lot of courage, and it's a beautiful adventure. Thank you very much. Now, we go to Madrid. We go to Madrid, but we stay in Europe. Mr. José Herrera, Madrid is a capital city, and we are going to talk about the colossal park that you built, which covers all of the thoroughfares and roads of the city. In terms of noise pollution, what did it change? You were able to introduce more nature in the city of Madrid. So has Madrid now, thanks to this large-scale work, did it improve the quality of life of the residents?
Thank you very much for the invitation to share our experience in Madrid in this panel. Of course, this huge intervention in the city has completely transformed not only the relation of the citizens around this area, but all the city. First of all, you need to consider that M30, that is this a great Madrid beltway, started to be built in 1974 in order to connect the southern neighborhoods in Madrid to the airport. The first four sections were built at the time in 1974, but it keep on continuing building many sectors in order to complete the belt in 1992. Until 2004, it was owned by the Ministry of Infrastructures of the national government. And at that year, the ownership of the M30 was granted to Madrid City Council. And that was the time in which the City Council decided to carry out a comprehensive transformation of the M30 through 17 major projects. The aim of these 17 projects were to improve the connections between the M30 and the main roads. You need to consider that Madrid is in the crossroads of six major highways in Spain that connect the center with the rest of the country. The City Council also wanted to create new routes to reduce the traffic and in congested areas. And what was more important was to fill the gap, to heal the wound created in the south of the city by the highway that separated the neighborhoods in the south with the historical center. This project was executed in a record time of 980 days. That was amazing. The total cost of the 17 projects was about 9.4 billion euros, and that were paid in a 54% by the national government, a 43% by the city council, and just a 3% by European funds. Most important part of this operation is that a priority was to keep on working the belt while the 17 projects were build up. Every day, many thousands of Madrileños use that way, even when many projects were currently working. Now, M-Train has a traffic of 430 million vehicles per year. The number is dropping. The record was in 2010, but it shows that many people now prefer to take the public transport that also has a huge expansion in the, in, at the same time that this project was built. This is the current situation of the of that area where there was a huge highway separating two parts of the city. Now there is a huge park that many hundreds of thousands of Madrileños benefit every day. There were used the construction was made through two different systems. For most of the projects, the construction was made through the cut and cover method, and that it was cheap and allowed to keep on the traffic working on. Please, the next slide. Yes. This is how it was built in most of the parts, but by the bypass underneath, two the major the machines that were called Dulcinea and Tizona were used. We, the city council, made the patents for these machines that are 15 meters in diameter, and allowed to build simultaneously the two ways of the highway while keeping the traffic on top. Please, the next slide. This is a section of the main part of the bypass. The tunnels are divided into three sectors. The middle sector is for traffic, for both private and public traffic. There is a service circulation way on the bottom of the tunnel in order to allow all the critical transports in Madrid to go quickly for an accident or something like that. And in the top, there is a part that allows the tunnel to recover the air and to keep on all the installations working at the same time. The tunnel has state-of-the-art installations concerning, for example, energy supply system. All of the installations are controlled by a single control center that operates 24 hours per day and 365 days per year. The energy, the internal network is managed from Calle 30 Control Center, and it needs a medium of 15 kilowatts per day with a total power demand of 60 megabytes. And the lighting system is also a state-of-the-art one with three levels of illumination, permanent, emergency, and guiding. For the traffic control system, that is one of the most efficient, that not only in order to guarantee that there are no traffic jams inside of the tunnels, but also in order to avoid accidents. There are seven parameters that are controlled every single second. And then there are also closed circuit television systems, linear heat detection that that measure every 50 meters a decrease of 1 degree in the temperature in of the internal of the tunnels. There are also public address systems in order to call the people if something happens, and systems for detecting atmospheric conditions, not only on the level of carbon monoxide and nitrogen monoxide, but also, for example, controlling the visibility inside of the tunnel in order to increase or decrease the light through the major control. This is now the central park that was that is in the top of the highways. This is an iconic bridge made by Dominique Perrault, a French architect, and as I said, hundreds of thousands of Madrileños use this every day in order not only to go to the city center or to their neighborhoods, but just to take fun or to play sports and game them. This huge effort wouldn't make sense without having a strong commitment to support and to increase the public network of transport. At the same time that the City Council was developing these 17 projects in the M30, the regional government was expanding the subway network and in a similar effort, and they built more than 140 kilometers of new lines and 90 new stations in just 10 years. That means that now Madrid has the fifth longest subway network in the world, just after London, New York, Shanghai, and Paris. Considering that we have much lower population, just 3.3 million people in the city, and 6.7 in all the region of Madrid. So, what are we? This is concerning to the park. The environmental corridor had a new 36,000 trees. Now there are more, and it is going to be connected also with what we call a metropolitan forest, that is a huge reforesting operation in the north of Madrid that will have 1.5 million new trees planted in 8 years and 5.5 million plants planted in the same time. And this is going to be connected to the city center through the north, through a huge operation that is called Madrid Nuevo Norte, that is also starting to be developed. This is, if I may, I will finish with this, and of course I can answer your questions. This Madrid Nuevo Norte is what we are doing now to create a new city center in the north. We believe that healing or filling the gap in the south, there is an opportunity to create a new urban center in the south that will be linked to a new urban development in Campamento, and this is another new neighborhood in the north that that has a huge scale. It has more than 400,000 square meters of green areas converging to the Central Park, and a 3-hectare space that will be created on the covering of the Chamartín roads. We are covering all the railways in a surface of 7 kilometers to with a width of 1 kilometer, and all of the top of these railways will be a new metropolitan forest.
Je trouve ça magnifique, c'est vrai que
wonderful. I remember visiting Madrid with ODF and the park, and the way you were able to cover the motorway is incredible. And but in fact, we can mention this at the next observatory. I don't really know, but you have some plant species. Now, don't quite know how to put this, but the roots don't go in the soil. On the motorways, you have trees with roots that spread out, don't go down. That's wonderful. Even for Montpellier, we're going to draw from that. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. So the last observatory, we have a tiny little bit of time left.
Alors c'est l'habitat et la vie urbaine. Bon, non.
So housing and urban living. We should have Jean-Philippe Ducoing-Clément, but he spoke this morning, so I will call on Francisco Javier Ayala Ortega and Renaud Sorlaregan. Thank you. Renaud Sorlaregan, who's also a member of our board and who's one of the experts on city center management. He's the chair of the National Observatory on City Center Management.
Alors, on va peut-être... Ouais, il est tout seul. Et donc, le maire de Menissé...
The mayor of Menissé, Mr. Ducoing-Clément, spoke this morning. English is on channel 2. French is on channel 3. Can you hear channel 2? Yes, thank you. So the mayor of Menissé, Mr. Ducoing-Clément, spoke this morning because there's a meeting of the city council this evening, so he can't be here, but he co-chairs with you this observatory on housing and urban living, which is very topical, how to draw inhabitants back into city centers. It's not just about new housing, it's also about upgrading and retrofitting. I give you the floor. Yes, as co-chair of this observatory, what would be the topics that you would like to work on, and what can you share in terms of experiences?
Okay, good afternoon. First of all, thank you for the director, thank you for the president of the Observatory for City Center. It's a great pleasure for me and for my city to participate in this observatory, and it's so important for us, for Fuenlabrada, to coordinate this this observatory, this area. This is important for me. And as you said, I think that we have to work for the next 2 years. We have to work for about four items or four lines to work. I am going to explain the four lines, and I explain to what we do in Fuenlabrada to accord with this with this line. First of all, I really would like to propose four lines of work. In first time, new housing. Second time, rehabilitation of housing to improve energy efficiency and universal accessibility. In third, housing for renting. And in fourth time, innovation and urban sustainability. Let's talk about new housing. We must work to facilitate citizens' access to decent, adequate and accessible housing. We must pay particular attention to the most vulnerable groups, such as younger people who are affected by job insecurity and access to credit. We need to create a new territorial and urban model based on the compact city approach. This model should prioritize sustainability, universal accessibility, environmental protection, and the fight against climate change. To meet demand's forecast, we must adjust new housing construction. This requires rational use of land and resources, including the water. Public initiative is essential to drive this process forward. The public administration should promote and control urban development. In the last 20 years, three new neighborhoods have been built in my city, Fuenlabrada. Municipal initiatives in urban planning, land expropriation, and development have enabled the construction of public housings with quality facilities and amenities at prices that are affordable. This project was awarded with National Urban Planning Award, a model of publicly controlled, subsidized housing with fixed price has been developed. As a result, young people have been able to access housing at a cost of less than 30% of their family income, creating a more egalitarian and cohesive city. In this point, I strongly believe that we should discuss about the concept of a compact city that uses less land. The idea is to increase urban density to promote sustainability, economic activity, and employment while reducing car dependency. This can be achieved by mixing different land uses and moving toward the concept of a 14-minute city. In the second hand, the second issue that I want to speak is housing rehabilitation. It's an essential aspect of housing policy. It's a fundamental tool for creating more sustainable, resilient, and habitable cities. Rehabilitation uses existing housings, rehabilitates urban areas, and maximizes the use of existing infrastructure. By reusing already developed spaces, it reduces the conceptions of new land and the ecological footprint of cities. The consolidated city has environmental value as a collective cultural creation that we must preserve and conserve. Renovation is a fundamental tool for regenerating an existing city. It involves rehabilitating buildings and public spaces in an integrated manner, while simultaneously improving living conditions, creating jobs, and promoting urban sustainability. Improving energy efficiency, making space universally accessible, repairing facilities and structural elements, and redeveloping public spaces are the main objective of housing renovation. In Spain, over the 81% of buildings have a low energy rating. In addition, 75% of residential buildings are not accessible, and 40% of four-story buildings lack a lift. For housing renovation, public support is a crucial. Homeowners association can improve their capacity to carry out renovation and energy efficiency works through technical assistance program and public financing. In the last 5 years, Fuenlabrada has rehabilitated over 5,000 homes with financial support from the municipality, Spanish government, and European Union. This action is part of the Fuenlabrada 2030 urban agenda. The aid of renovation promotes conservation, improved energy efficiency, and universal accessibility in housing and the urban environment. This helps to reduce energy bills for the families and greenhouse gas emissions in line with the European Union's objective. We aim to promote a green transition, decarbonization, and energy efficiency to increase the comfort and the attractiveness of housing in our city by supporting the most vulnerable social group. This will help create jobs and new economic activity. Housing renovation can stimulate activity and employment in our cities. In order to achieve this, we need to use all our resources and give a new lease of life to this building. We should make use of empty and underused buildings to create energy efficient, sustainable, and inclusive housing that meets the challenges of the new Bauhaus and European Green Pact. We go to the third point, rental housing. We should prioritize policies that make it easier to rent homes. The instability of the job market and high housing costs make it difficult for young people to become emancipated. We need to encourage the construction of high-quality social rental housing with efficient standards. to strengthen the economic incentives for its development at public prices. This program will require a long-term agreement, 25 years. By doing so, we can increase the supply of rental housing, which will help to moderate prices. The aim to this measure is to support the construction of public social rental housing. This will facilitate access to affordable rental housing for young people, the elderly, and the most vulnerable sectors. Municipalities can provide public land, and regional and state governments can provide the necessary funding for the construction of rental housing. The rental housing market in Spain was very weak, making this policy particularly important. Only just over 20% of the population resides in rented property. They help young people facing vulnerability and social exclusion, and to facilitate their emancipation, Fuenlabrada City Council has launched a line of assistance to combat energy poverty, promote responsible use of energy, and maintain habitual residence. The grants aim to maintain equity and reach those in need based on their income level. They are calculated according to the household income and aim to facilitate young people's access to decent rented houses, supporting their emancipation. Last but not the least, let's discuss about innovation and urban sustainability. We have covered the main topic of housing policy, building new homes, renovating existing home ones, and providing rental housing. All three are important. We must work on them and move forward. In a forum like the Observatory for City Center, we need to make risky and innovative proposals. Our commitment to mitigate the climate impact in building sustainable, efficient, and resource-efficient cities is defined by the European Green Pact framework. We need to pay more attention to innovative urban projects, try new and risky solutions to address urban challenges and especially new housing needs, to reduce the ecological footprint of our cities and meet the housing needs of our citizens. We must use all available resources. We should reclaim all empty buildings in the heart of all our cities and give them a new life. In urban centers, we will soon have many empty buildings, which I see as valuable heritage. Rather than constructing new housing, we can adapt these buildings to meet citizen demands. This can be achieved by reducing the average size of housing, improving accessibility, energy efficiency, and connectivity, providing innovative technologies, and increasing common areas to share spaces. This approach reduces land consumption, increases comfort, and strengthens social ties between inhabitants. It combats unwanted loneliness and strengthens the sense of the community and social identity. The European Urban Initiative by DG Regio is an excellent program for cities to experiment and develop new capacities for urban transformation. It promotes innovation in the face of urban challenges in the European Union. The European Union initiative serves as a good example of such a program. For La Brada City Council, I'm finished now. Don't worry. For La Brada City Council has, this is the more important thing. For La Brada City Council has launched a project called SHARE, which is an intergenerational cooperation project. The program has provided funding for this initiative. The project provides accessible and adapted housing for the elderly in a disused public school. The elderly then rent their homes to young people at public prices, allowing them to emancipate themselves. Technicians from the fields of architecture, social welfare, and elderly care will collaborate in a co-design process to transform the public school in response to needs of the elderly. CER also offers assistance to rehabilitating homes that will remain vacant and adapting them to the needs of young people. These young people will then participate in activities with the elderly to enhance their personal autonomy and combat the loneliness. We must pay attention to energy efficiency and the fight against energy poverty. Initiatives like district heating for energy communities can help us develop a more social and independent energy model. This model replaces the consumption of the consumption of fossil fuels with renewable energies like the sun, wind, or biomass. Cities and local councils can play a crucial role in promoting the use of renewable energies in public spaces to reduce greenhouse gas emissions and achieve climate neutrality. They can organize the articulate demands for this process, such as installing solar panels on the roof of large public facilities. We need to mobilize public resources to fight energy poverty, which mainly affects the elderly and young people. This is particularly important in cities like mine. In Spain, 30.3% of young people are in risk of social exclusion. This makes it difficult for them to become independent and enjoy a self-sufficient life. Energy poverty is a form of social exclusion and affects young people across the European Union. Then, these are the four points. And finished. Thank you so much for your attention. Thank you so much.
Merci beaucoup. Alors,
thank you so very much.
Je pense que cet observatoire.
Now, this observatory is going to be gripping. I'd now like to give the floor to Philippe Laurent, President. Renaud Saure-Larguin will conclude because he's chair of the observatory. So you oversee everything, don't you? We should wind up at 4:10 because there are people who have to catch trains. So if you could wind up. Well, those of you who've got to catch trains, you're allowed to leave. We don't have the same viewpoint from here and from there. I was sitting right at the end of the room near the radiators. I thought I was the only one to be on my phone. Now, since a lot of you are on your phones, you are going to be able to relate to what I've posted on my site as a conclusion so that you can keep on working on your phone. We were modern in the Centre Ville en Mouvement, aren't we? Yes, so what a wonderful idea to have this observatory, because it's been 25 years that we've been working on city centres, for some a lot more, but they were precursors. There were the whistleblowers, so thank you to those who were in charge of Centre Ville en Mouvement. You were the first ones to tell us, and then mayors, a lot of you rallied around the cause of city centres 20, 25 years ago. And then there was another phase, that of including the different aspects of the city centre. Initially, city centres were synonymous to shop owners, tradesmen, or maybe housing, and then activity areas. But I think that it was only in 2017, thanks to the government initiative, Jacques Mézard at the time,
who launched Action Cœur de Ville with an inclusive approach, maybe not the best word, but try to define the different aspects that will make a city center attractive. Only shop, that's not enough. A center is a center because it has everything within. So being central, that's what it is, but a lot was taken out. First shops in the 70s and 80s, then housing, then stadia, then cultural equipment, much more the administration. A lot of town halls were moved outside the city centres. So what made the centre was moved and nothing was left but the heritage, and the substance was no longer there. It was scattered, so there was an attraction all around the center, but nothing to compete with the historic center as it used to be. So the center is still important nowadays, and it is thanks to this global approach, this action plan to revitalize city centers, Action Cœur de Ville, small towns of tomorrow, that we were able to look into the subject holistically. Cultural services, management tools, housing, wonderful cities with everything around us. So that means a quality of life for citizens, and also very important to cut down on greenhouse gas emissions. So third phase, this is the phase we're in nowadays. We have this observatory, and I've noted that there's a lot of us who ask for information to be shared, data, examples of good practice, a great request. We've never been more ready than we are today. People want to know. We were beginners 20 or 30 years ago, and we all reinvented the wheel because nobody had the knowledge, and now we all know a little bit of this and that, but we don't know everything because something important is happening nowadays. Someone said it, by the way, changes, energy changes, environmental changes, the work mode changing, shopping, everything's happening at the same time. So speeding up of changes, housing, energy, the way we live, but also dealing with all of that at the same time. So we can't infuse life into city centres with our old practices, saying we're going to give money to the Association of Shopkeepers, or we're going to buy a mall, or we're going to organise cultural activities. No, that's not enough. We have to look into the city centres in a much broader, with a much broader approach. And this is why we have to talk to each other. And I think that we can do this very well here in Europe, because despite the fact that Europe is big, we can understand the problems of Sweden, Italy, Portugal. We have similar problems. But practices are different, of course, because of our distance. And so we can learn from one another. Now, we're all here. And sometimes we say, I've got a problem, I don't know what to do. But I think that maybe someone might be able to tell me what to do. And who knows, maybe I could give them some ideas as well. So I think we are mature. We are ready. We are more aware of what we don't know. We're more curious. We are more willing to share data, examples of good practice, and an observatory, therefore, is absolutely key. The challenges are difficult. Now, this was said very well by someone, I can't remember whom. The challenges we're facing are near impossible. How can we create housing? Great demand for housing. But at the same time, we're asked not to build too
much on virgin grounds. It's also important to protect arable land, mountainous areas, so we have to look into what we have, building on what's already built. Housing is difficult. There's a problem of cleaning up old buildings. So we have very little wiggle room in as regards housing. Then there is gentrification, many reasons, of course. Airbnb, tourism, speculation. A lot of young people who might want to live in city centers. Pierre said, it's funny. The youngest of our generation want to live once more like their great grandparents used to do. They don't want to have a car. They want to work in town. They want to go on their scooter. They don't want to go to shopping mall. Young people want to live in the cities of their great grandparents. We've skipped two generations. I hope I'm clear. In cities, there are the elderly and the very young. And that's very positive. And then, of course, there's the environmental challenge. I feel that there's no better place than the city center to cut down on greenhouse gas, to promote social links, cut down on exclusion. Do you remember the Gilets Jaunes? We've forgotten about them. How can one spend less by using the car less, living in the city center, having more time for oneself, for one's education, for educating oneself? So we are realizing the city center is not only something to be defended because it reminds us of our younger years, it mustn't only be defended because it represents our identity, the church, and so on. It is, in fact, the best place to live in. And that, given climate changes, deregulation of the climate, that's why we have to be careful with the commutes. There's also the problem of protecting land. So city centers defend themselves not only for sentimental reasons or patrimonial reasons, but for other reasons as well. The survival of our system, the survival of tomorrow's societies. We have to be more sober. We have to live within the city center. Of course, this will bring with it difficulties. We shouldn't build on several floors like New York. It's important to allow people to live in bigger spaces. So we'll have to combine the desire of the individual for space outdoors and the need to live together in smaller spaces. So here I call on architects, town planners. We have to optimize. There's a lot to do, to think about, to create habits, to change, to be reinvented. Thank you very much.
J'ai pas grand chose à dire en plus.
Thank you very much. Nothing more to add, really, other than to say that it was extremely interesting to hear those good practices, best practicing. I would like to really thank all of the teams within the Centre-Ville en Mouvement and the amount of work they managed to achieve in a short time. Alice de Segui, thank you. Thank you to our photographer, Audrey. I also would like to thank the members of the Bureau, to our chairperson for their trust. Thank you to Dominic and all of the team of the board. And thank you to those who stayed until the end. Thank you very much. Thank you, Pierre.
Mm-hmm.